cliffcentral.com. Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform. It's absolutely wonderful to be with you. Transforming towards an empowered society. That's what we hope we can achieve through leadership, of course. I'm Adrian Groenewald. And as always, the old man, Louis Groenewald, with me. Hi, Louis.
Hi, Adrian. I'm really looking forward to today's program.
You always say that. You know that.
Do
you
mean it? I am.
For all things leadership, go to leadershipplatform.com. Two P's in the middle, leadershipplatform.com. And our special guest today for our Leadership Masterclass over the next close to an hour is Advocate Gerry Nel. No introduction needed. Of course, he's been in the media more than even in the past, which is hard to believe. He left the NPA to become a private prosecutor for AfriForum. And of course, the media in general, I think, tried or still tries their utmost to make a bigger issue of it than it perhaps is. Or maybe it is a huge issue. I think it is, but maybe not in the areas that they focus on. Louis, your initial thoughts on this news story, shall we say, and this leader that we're going to chat to today?
Personally, Arjun, I think it's historic. I think Gerry represents a whole new dimension in balancing the situation in South Africa. So I'm looking forward to his comments. I think it's a historic occasion. His great reputation, yes, but also that he's willing to take this leap into another world in many ways. I think it represents a legitimate voice that we haven't heard as well as we should have in the past in our country.
So before we ask him, do you think he knows it's historic? He's so in the middle of it, I'm not sure he knows it's historic. Louis?
Well, I think Gerry's a fighter. He takes it as it comes, probably. But I think he's thought it through very carefully. That's his training.
Good, good. Well, Gerry, Advocate Gerry Nel, welcome. We're sitting at AfriForum in one of the offices. This is your second home, I guess, for the next few years and foreseeable future. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
I'm absolutely astounded, Gerry, about the kind of household name you have become. I wonder if you realize how much of a household name you are. It's crazy.
I know, I don't. I've been so pleasantly surprised now in all the support that I got from everybody. You always think that, yeah, you have support and people know you and people recognize you, but not at all, not even close to what I've seen in the last week or so.
I remember sitting with Heineke Meyer before he became Springbok coach, and he was quite a big name already, Blue Bulls coach, and you know, had been on that scene. But when he became Springbok coach, just went into another level, and that's kind of, I think, maybe what's happened with you. I guess it's the Oscar case to a large degree, although you've had high-profile cases, we all know, but that certainly catapulted you.
Yeah, I think it's the power of TV. That matter was on TV everywhere. People watched it. I said at a stage to everybody that there are only two advocates in this country that didn't know what was going on in that trial, and it was Barry and I, because everybody else had a view and everybody else knew exactly, and we were just struggling along.
This morning, I know you were on Gareth's show, and he did ask you a little bit about what it's like walking in the streets and bumping into people. I didn't hear the answer because we were on our way to an appointment, but your life has obviously changed. Has this prominence just been good? Surely not.
No, surely
not. It's never what it seemed to be to the outsider.
Yeah, but what I must say is, when it started and when people recognized you on the street for the first time, it's very difficult to deal with. And people would invade your space. They would think that you belong to them. They would just think that automatically you want to take hundreds of selfies with a whole bus full of people. But I must say, when it happened and you realize that people are there to appreciate what you're doing and that they think that you're doing a good job, makes it so much easier. So make it so much easier to deal with people that appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, I've been a prosecutor and that's our reward over years, just the appreciation by people for a job well done.
Those closest to the court case who feel justice has been done, as well as now with high-profile cases, the broader population.
Indeed. And that's the reward of a prosecutor.
I mean, it's not the salary or anything.
It's not the salary. And I mean, defense advocates, they earn lots of money.
Oh, yeah, too much.
But they can never really get what we get. And that's that appreciation by victims of crime.
And the bad part, I guess you walk into a restaurant, you've got your funny buggers who say silly things and really try and taunt you. You've had that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody think that if they see you and they call you m'lady, or I put it to you that it's the first time that you hear the joke.
Yeah.
but it isn't. But then again, I think that I'm always aware of the fact that I should be calm and I should deal with this person as the person that's seen me for the first time, because, you know, one incident where you lose your temper will ruin you for life. So, no, I take it as it goes. And I've had people that approach me that said that I'm the most horrible person, and I understand them as well. I think that makes it easier for me, because I understand them. I understand how passionate they are. You know, let's talk about Pistorius matter. I know how passionate they are about Oscar Pistorius.
They got emotionally involved almost.
And I appreciate that. And I deal with them well, knowing that.
I like what you said there, looking at every person and trying to see it as from their eyes. It's like a specialist. When you see a very busy ear, nose, throat specialist, 5 o'clock that afternoon, you want to feel like the first patient of the day. But for that guy, how many people can I be nice to? And that's kind of... And then the other thing you mentioned, so Louis, that's so valuable. It's so unfair in today's world as a leader and a prominent individual. You can meet 1,000 people and be kind to all of them. The one guy gets your back up and you do something silly and your reputation goes out. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
I think so. Especially the area that Gerrie now has gone into, it's different. He had a certain protection environment before Gerrie. You were the prosecutor and you had a job to do. Now you represent something else. And possibly we can discuss it on the show as well. So I think it's more sensitive. That's why you are prepared to speak to the media now.
It's that and something else. The reason why I decided to really engage with the media is for people to understand what we're doing. But I've seen it develop. You know, at first people said they're creating a parallel prosecution stream and they threw lots of politics and agendas into it. But if you get an opportunity to explain really what it's all about, I mean, it dispels all those kind of agendas that people think that you're chasing.
So I was going to say next, you've had a lot of interviews by now, and I'd like to ask you one more time to say exactly what you're going to do. I know you're talking about the thing that excites you is starting something new. Just expand to us one more time what this something new is. And then I want you to touch on your vision for this in 3 to 5 years. Well, what do you hope, if we had to chat again in 3 to 5 years, what do you hope you have achieved and what have you built?
Let me first say, I'm a realist. I'm very realistic about things. I was involved in the creation of the Scorpions from day one. That was brilliant. That was new. That was exciting. I feel the same now.
Well, you said when it was disbanded. I mean,
it was disbanded. I think people made mistakes, but the concept, I think, it's still brilliant. I think you cannot do any important big case without following the model that we had in the Scorpion. So there we built something. Unfortunately, it was disbanded. And so here I was. I've got 5 years left in the public service before I retire. And you know, everybody, when they retire, they slow down. So you slow down. And I was approached out of the blue. Out of the blue, I was approached with this concept that developed also over time. And I really considered everything about this move. But let me just tell you, in broad strokes, what happens is every prosecution in this country, every case that the police investigate, has to go to the prosecution service, and they must decide to prosecute or not. Now, there's a prosecution policy, and it's driven by the merits of the case. Do you have facts to prove the case? Now, if they decide not to prosecute, only then do we have an opportunity to see if we can get that case to prosecute. But there are three steps. Step one is they decide to prosecute. We look at the matter and we see, but there's merit in the matter. We should prosecute. If we then apply for a nolle prosequi certificate, you know, every lawyer uses a Latin term somewhere, but it's just a certificate that enables you to prosecute if you're not the state, a nolle prosequi certificate. If we apply, they have a second bite at the cherry. So they can now say, we want to reconsider and prosecute.
Which is a good thing anyway if they do. Yeah.
Indeed. But there's a third layer, and that is, if we start and we prosecute, they can take it over at any time. And the main reason is cost. If this is, this will cost lots of money. And that's why when I was approached, one of the things that you discuss is, you know, will we have funding to do this? Is it possible to do? And when AfriForum said that they've got a budget for this, and I was happy with the budget, I just thought, well, then I should get involved. But let me just explain. If we want to prosecute anyone, we have to guarantee that person's cost before we start. So before we start, we have to guarantee his cost, because if we lose and he's acquitted, we have to pay all his cost. But the issue is we have to guarantee that before we start. But on the flip side, if we're successful, then we claim all our costs back from the state.
Okay.
So therefore, the state has to jump in as soon as they see that we're going somewhere for them to save cost.
All right. That makes it quite clear.
But in that sense, the objective may well have been reached.
Indeed. Yeah. In any way, if they reconsider and prosecute, we'll be happy. If they take the prosecution over and run with it, we'll be happy, because we don't have unlimited resources. Like the state, I mean, they definitely are the best institution to prosecute, not us.
Hmm. All right, and a little bit more about the unit. So you'll be employing a couple of people, and then the 3 to 5 year vision. Do you have it clear in your mind?
Yep. You see, at first, I'm going to give me enough opportunity to conceptualize this. I think the big mistake we made with the Scorpions is we had to hit the ground running and be effective immediately and play in the big leagues immediately.
Mm.
So we made mistakes. So I don't want to make mistakes here. I want to really conceptualize what we're doing, get processes in place, and for myself, know what we're doing. I want to appoint a very small team, and it will be a diverse team, and it will be lawyers and investigators. But it's not an army. It's just to have a soundboard of an investigator to look at the matter and to see what we can still get, because I'm just a lawyer.
Hmm.
So I've worked in teams, and the input you get from an investigator, no prosecutor can ever give you.
Hmm.
So people ask me, what I foresee is 3 to 5 people, 5 people maximum. And then we have to, the main thing for me now is to select the best guys to do first.
Yeah.
Because
That first impression.
Yeah. What do you do? You know, people ask me, would you shoot high? Would you aim high? Would you aim low? And my answer is, I'll aim to be successful, because at all costs, if we get that case, we have to be successful in our first.
It's literally costs as well.
Yes.
Because unfortunately, you can't do it under the radar.
Yep.
You are who you are now. That's the disadvantage of who you are in a way, but there's advantages.
But I appreciate that. And I've challenged people, you know, when you get involved in something, you get so involved that you're able to look from the outside in. You think you're able to be objective, but you're not, because you look through those particular glasses. So I've challenged people, and I do it again. Keep us on the right track. I mean, I every criticism I get, and Professor DeForce wrote lots of things about this. Everybody's writing about this. I just love it. I read everything, because what they do now is they make it so much easier for me to conceptualize what we're doing.
Mm.
So I really, as far as criticism is, as far as criticism goes, I would love people to criticize.
There are other organizations. One that comes to mind is Outer, okay, with Wayne Duvenage. They also have an investigative team and a legal budget almost, or litigation budget.
Mm.
So will you collaborate?
Indeed. Mm. You know, we're now there. This is historic. I mean, this is a first. Over time, I got very excited about this opportunity. And at the moment, I'm very excited to create something that I think is so necessary and is so new. So we're there. Anybody that will be able to get a Nolle Prosequi certificate can approach us to do the prosecution, because where they have perhaps a better investigative capacity, we have the prosecutors.
So some prosecution against a President Zuma may not happen. The DA might get that certificate and then come to you and say, go for it.
Anyone can do it.
You are prominent, and your leaving deserves coverage, but And I know this question has been posed at you, but I'm not clear in my mind. It seems like this almost excessive noise about where you've what you've done and where you've gone is predominantly because you chose to do it under the AfriForum banner. And not another organization. It's almost as though there's a negative perception about AfriForum, as though they're not allowed to exist. And do you think the perceptions about them are accurate? Is this fair? You know, my impression is they're not just for a minority Afrikaner group. They've become more than that. But can you help me right there?
You know, I've got, when I, in discussions, I made it clear that as far as politics is concerned, as far as the main business of AfriForum is concerned, I will not get involved. I am just a prosecutor, and they will allow me to become just to remain just a prosecutor. I've never had a political agenda, and I still don't. And I'm now, well, in a way, not going to answer your question because I don't want to be on record about anything that's not part of my specific unit, because I have to still have the confidence of a judge looking down on me to say that he's still a prosecutor that will prosecute without fear, favor, or prejudice, and he doesn't have other baggage with him. So, but I always answer these people by saying, AfriForum approached me. Nobody else approached me. I did not go out.
They have a vision there. Yeah.
I did not go out and say in the market for somebody to employ me. I was happy. And, you know, they had not only the vision, they had the budget. I mean, it doesn't come cheap, and they're willing to put their money where their mouths are. I mean, so.
Okay, that's the answer is even better than the one I heard. And I'm comfortable with that. I see where you're going with it. When this question was asked on ENCA, you explained somewhat in that direction. You said the attraction is starting something new, but then you also said the word necessary popped out. You said, I'm starting something that's necessary.
Yes.
And I want to ask you, why is this necessary? I mean, what's the gap out there that needs filling?
Only this. We cannot allow selective prosecution, because if there's even a perception of selective prosecution, then everybody's not equal before the law. And the equality principle is the most important principles in a legal system, in a criminal legal system. Everybody must be equal before the law. So it's necessary. And I've said so before, if we cannot find a case, then I'll be willing to in a year from now say, you know what, there's no selective prosecutions because I've checked all of them. And that will also then ensure that people believe in the equality before the law. So necessary, there's a perception. The perception as far as people are talking, well, even now since I started UNIT with all the emails and things that I get, there's a real perception, and people feel it's more than a perception. So if it is, and if it exists, it's definitely necessary to ensure that the equality principle is enforced.
Okay. When you were at the NPA, of course, you weren't involved in selecting which prosecutions happened. You were given a case and said, go.
Yeah. Let me just say, you know, I'm a prosecutor at heart, and I've got the biggest respect for all prosecutors in this country. I've decided cases, and I've decided not to prosecute, but on the facts. Therefore, any matter that, and most of my colleagues that I know and worked with for lots and lots of years, if they make a decision on a case docket, they will not have any problem for anybody else to look at it and to say that they were wrong. Because we will just look at the facts of the matter and make a decision. It's only once there are facts to prosecute and there's a decision not to prosecute that we'll get involved. So I've taken lots of decisions. Every one of them could be scrutinized. I've got no problem with that.
I just want to clear something in my mind. I saw an interesting article, but this concept has been in my mind for some time. And that is, in our society in South Africa, we see a lot of concurrent structures developing because of a lack of faith in the government structures. So let's say education. Private schools pop up all over the place because there's a lack of faith in education. Homeschooling, one of the fastest growing industries out there. You've got security. People subcontract their own security firms because they don't trust that the police can look after their safety. Health, private health. Again, we don't trust the public hospitals, so we have our own medical aid and all private hospitals. And so I can go on about all these concurrent structures starting. And now we also see the concurrent NPA type structures starting, which it's understandable that we turn around and say, hold on, does this mean we have a lack of faith in the efficacy of the current NPA or prosecution structures? And it's not just because you're starting it. It's because of the outers and others who have their own litigation budgets and are trying to pick up the pieces that seem to fall through the cracks. So from what I've heard you say in other interviews, Harry, you have a lot of confidence in all the prosecutors out there working their backsides off in Soweto and all over the show. But if we look at the trend of concurrent structures, then we cannot but think that, hold on, how confident must we be in that structure in our system, which has been a very solid one in many respects, certainly high-profile cases.
You see, I've said, what is this saying? The proof of the pudding is in the eating. Is that
the proof of the pudding is in the eating? Yeah.
Is it? I've got it right this time. So if we successfully prosecute one case, then the next debate will start about if we have trust in organizations, if we have trust in the NPA, why did that particular matter never, through the normal course of prosecutions, why did they not prosecute that? So for now, I think we're a bit premature with any of those debates. But if there's a successful prosecution, I mean, that will open up a big debate about trust in the NPA, trust in the legal system, trust in everything. But that's what we want to achieve, you know, really. If
you don't wish that, to be honest.
I don't wish that. And I don't think that the matters that we'll take will come from a prosecutor at the local court. I think it will go much higher up, perhaps by management taking decisions or anything like that, you know, at the provincial level or a headquarters level.
Okay, Louis, questions? What's on your mind? You're sitting there quietly.
By implication, Harry, if you are successful, which you believe you will be, it will put a completely acceptable pressure on NPA. Perhaps I think the distrust comes from the fact that people think often there's a political correctness interpretation of the cases they take, etc. And perhaps understandable, they have a very heavy workload. So you represent a voice, I think, that could help restore the balance. And I think this is important. Perhaps 5 or 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been effective. But I think the country is far readier for it. And people are far more free-thinking. Even the famous case you're involved with Oscar and so on, I've heard more legal experts in my life on TV than ever before. And having a little background in my family, I thought, boy, these guys really either know the law or there's something wrong here. It's a little bit like but as the case went on, a lot of people started understanding the tremendous process involved. They have a prosecution that goes all out, and you did, and a defense that very competently tried the best. This is a good system. It's not a perfect system, but it's pretty close to what we need to do. But the whole society must have trust in that process. Indeed. That somebody who's done in or an injustice has got a right. And right now, and often it's the wealthy person or the wealthy politician that perhaps can get away with things. And so this represents far more than purely what we're speaking about here.
And we've heard you say the educational value of what you've been through with Oscar and other cases, it's been superb. It wasn't incredible those times, wasn't it? I mean, he was absolutely guilty, and then he wasn't guilty. It depends on who was at the stand. But well done on getting through that. That was on in a different league. I wonder what it compares with O.J. Simpson. I don't know. It was absolutely magnificently big, and I don't want us to focus on that. But well done on getting through it. It must have been, as you say, all-consuming for 4 years. I heard you say, well, I don't know what all-consuming means, family life, training, at least you got your golf in, but all consuming. People don't understand what the heck that means.
No, that's true. May I just make a point? You know, on the vision going forward and what you just said, I don't know who said it, but it's brilliant. If a dog bites once, thereafter a dog will get the same result with barking, you know, if you just bark.
Mm. Yes.
So that's my vision. I cannot see us doing hundreds of cases going forward. I can see us making an impact 2-3 cases.
A good bite and then...
And then sit back and say, we're here, and so please do your job. And if they do, that's brilliant.
That'll restore a balance, yes, in a sense.
Your thoughts on the Constitution. Yes. Are you, in essence, a defender of it? We've had Tuli Madonsela sit there, and she's so strong on that. Of course, she's played a massive role. She's put it firmly on the table. Do you see a link with that in your job and your life?
Yes, 100%. I'm a supporter of the Constitution, you know, and never more so than in the Pistorius appeal. You know, without the Constitution, we would never have had a right, the state, to appeal. And everybody said, appeal, appeal. It was such an argument to say that we have a right to. And that right to appeal in the circumstances of Pistorius matter came from the Constitution. So no, I'm 100% a supporter of the Constitution. Mm. It's an incredible document. I mean, the NSPCA matter where the NSPCA applied for a nolle prosequi certificate, the NPA refused. They went to the local High Court. The High Court refused. They went to the Supreme Court of Appeal. It was refused there, and it was heard in the Constitutional Court last year. Again, a brilliant judgment. And not only a brilliant judgment because it supports us, that only leaves the door open for us to argue and say that the scope of private prosecutions should be widened. Mm. But it leaves it open. So no, I'm a defender of the Constitution with everything I have.
See, what's happened in public mind also, beforehand we had an idea that the country is ruled by a political party. Tuli Madonsela and your case all brought, we ruled by the Constitution, but we must support that as well. And this is a good case in point. Again, it goes to the legal channels, and then the Constitutional Court, which is really Constitution-based, gives another kind of ruling. And so a new standard is being established. And I think this is really what you're saying as well, Harry. I think it's exciting. The country needs another voice in that respect to restore the trust in our system.
Thank you.
But let me come from another angle here. I heard a very wise man, a spiritual leader, say that the last line of defense is the legal system in our society of the behaviors and so on. And that worries me a great deal because what we should rely on as individuals is our own moral compass to determine our behavior, how I treat women or how I treat my fellow man or whatever it is. But in South Africa, I get the impression that businesses and individuals and so on depend so heavily or lean so heavily on this last line of defense. And if this had to crumble, I think you coming along is another strengthening of this last line of defense. But if we believe in that principle, Harry, my worry is, are we doing enough to teach moral values? You've seen people come through the courts and it probably went wrong in family life when they were kids already. Your views on, are we doing enough to strengthen the other lines of defense as opposed to this last line of defense? Does it make sense?
It does. And I've had hundreds of these conversations with people, and none more so except where that people talk about corruption. You know, you can't go anywhere and people will talk about corruption. And I would just then say, but aren't we all corrupt? I mean, the mere fact that that somebody would stop and pay a traffic cop 200 rand to get away, for him, he thinks that's not corruption, but it is. The mere fact that you'll exceed the speed limit, you know, that's not corruption as a defense, but that just shows your disrespect for the law. So we have to start everywhere and just rebuild a respect for the law. But you're right, the last defense must be the courts, and we're in good hands. I mean, our court system in this country is unbelievably strong. The judgments I read, and I've never been to the Supreme Court of Appeal without returning from there thinking,
thank goodness.
Our law's in good hands. And I've challenged my junior saying, the first thing you'll say when you walk away from Bloemfontein is, our law is in good hands. And that's a fact. So, yes, I think we should do more. I do think that in a way, the Pistorius case and the mere fact that everybody had it in their homes and watched it played a role in saying and showing people that it's not a game. It's really serious if you charge with a criminal matter, and that the courts still work.
Mm. But also, Harry, trust in the process. For instance, the advantage of having a prosecution approach. Now, everybody's got opinions and everybody speaks, and often your opinions don't really change. But when you go through the process where there's a competent prosecution and then a competent defense, that not only does it lead to a result, hopefully, but also leads to discipline, that we all start understanding the situation clearer and clearer. That is also a training process for the people around. And with this high profile, it helps as well, because more people will think about the situation. I saw people in the Oscar case change opinions in the process, or get at least humble, really, but there's more at stake than we think.
Yeah. But may I also just say one more thing about the Pistorius matter? You know, our legal system, our courts get criticized for postponing cases. Now, I understand that there's always lots of postponements, but the one thing we achieved in the Pistorius matters, we started that trial and the judge ensured that it ran. I mean, she ran a tight court for all that time. We had really no time to say, we would just like to take a day or two off and, you know, prepare something. And she would want you to prepare and be ready the next day. And I think that, in a sense, the fact that we started and we ran and there were no postponements and delays, unnecessary delays, that was just the judge. So I think that all in all, looking back at it, I think I'm certainly very proud of having been part of that.
Mm. Harry, you're a man who asks questions for a living. And the media are asking you questions left, right, and center at the moment. But here's a question for you. What questions are not being asked throughout all this questioning process? Are the media, are South Africans asking the right questions about your move?
Not at first, but it developed. Our first interviews, really, I was sitting there thinking, we're not asking the right questions. And I think in answering those questions, you drive the questions. Yep. and that the next reporter would ask you. I think we now had the right questions. I now think we had the correct questions. And understanding of the concept really assisted people in getting to the right questions. And so it developed. Mm. At first, you know, I think if one would do a study of what happened with the first interviews up until the interviews I had this morning, there's a big difference.
It would be an interesting study, you're right.
There's a big difference, there's understanding, and it became easier for me. Because at first people would just think he's leaving because he's upset they drove him out of the NPA. I mean, people used words like gutful and so on and so on and so on. And then later, I think people realized that, and certainly in this interview, that it's something new. It's exciting. It's something that I want to do.
Mm. Gives you a new life. Well, yes, you're probably putting a lot of pressure. We'll get there now. A lot of necessary pressure on yourself, Louis.
But really, after the initial articles, today I read this one, was today or day so, by Brutus Malada, City Press contributor, and I was quite amazed. He sifted through about the public debate about you, it's a lot of nonsense, and then he went to issues, and he sketched all the reasons for distrust in the country while relying more on balancing systems out there. And this is
I've read that.
This confirms actually what you're saying. But and this immediately, I'm not sure whether this got any right-wing opinions. It doesn't matter. What he's saying, that it's in this context that Harry has made this decision. And I like that. So it shows there can be a lot of maturity in our media as well.
I certainly think it developed. Yeah. Yes. I think we're now at the right space.
It justifies also why Harry was prepared to. Now, we speak in leadership often about people, don't be afraid to confront situations. Engage. Don't try and avoid things. So you engage the media. You don't know exactly the reaction you're going to get. But it justifies the reasons for you doing it. But suddenly you see there's a pattern and maturity is coming out.
Something totally different. I like your statement, leave while you are happy.
Yeah.
Expand a bit on that. A lot of people are sitting in jobs or in positions that they love, and they sit there until they hate it.
Yeah. And certainly, I know people that hate what they're doing. They absolutely hate it. But and that's so counterproductive for them, because they can't see clearly and they can never get out of it. That's the strangest thing. They sit in a job that they hate and they can never get out of it. And I think what people also do is they sit in a job, and when they hate the job, they fall back on, but I've got an income. and I'm not gambling with an income, and that then it just creates a snowball effect. For me, that's one of the things that I considered, is that I still enjoy, up until the time that I resigned, I did a case 3 weeks ago in Vereniging that I enjoyed tremendously. I mean, I'm just a court person. That's my personality. That's where I grew up. And so it made it so much easier for me to say that I'm not driven out of the office. I'm not leaving because I can't take it anymore or can't do it anymore. I think that is about the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think I can do it.
But from a leadership perspective, you know, we've been interviewing leaders for many years, hundreds of articles published and books, etc. But one thing we find with top leaders is the ability to feel passionate about something. Now, if you start hating something, it's impossible to be passionate about it. Your body language, your expressions, and your perceptions, how you interpret reality changes. So you must be very careful how you feel about your job.
Yeah, sure. Indeed, indeed.
Harry, this is a leadership show in the end. Mm. We believe every human being has leadership inside him or her. How it comes out and how it materializes, or that's another story. Do you see yourself as a leader?
I do. I've led lots of teams. I've led teams in cases that we did. I was the head of the Scorpions unit. And you know, you're not of a Scorpions unit, which comprised of investigators and prosecutors. You're not only an office manager or a manager or a CEO. You have to be a leader because it's two different groups of people thinking differently, and you have to then create the unity. And for me, that was a challenge that I loved. And so I have to think of myself as a leader.
Hmm. And describe a bit, I'm guessing that you haven't necessarily read hundreds of leadership books, and maybe you've read a few and maybe you have some, but describe to me your leadership approach. So if you have a team, just you mentioned the word unity immediately pops out. So clearly you feel strongly about that in your leadership.
I know if you ask any of the members on my teams in the two big cases that I've done, the golden thread for me is, and it's leadership from a prosecutor's perspective, is do the right thing at all times. I mean, lots of people can take lots of shortcuts and do lots of things, but that doesn't last. So for me is do the right thing always, even when it's unbelievably difficult to do. Even if you have to give information over that can sink your own case or something like that. That's the one thing. The other thing is I never ask of people something to do something that I cannot do myself and will not do myself.
Mm.
So there are people with more skills than I, but if I'm willing to go to do what they're doing, I'll ask them to do that. And, you know, we were in a different environment. And it's not leadership, but it's just the way we dealt with in our team. And that is, we stay there till everybody's done. We help till the job is done, and then we go.
Okay, let's take those three very quickly. So the first one is always do the right thing, no matter how difficult. It's a tough one. So, for example, I get pulled off by a traffic cop, and I'm on my way to my family. They haven't seen me for a long time. I've driven 180. They can lock me up, I guess. The guy says, how much cash do you have on you? You know, or I take you to jail right now. I take you to the cell. So $1,000 I've got on me. This hasn't happened to me, so I don't want to make it sound too good. But now I have to decide, I'm on my way to my family. Or maybe my wife is even ill, not deathbed or anything, but ill. So I'm saying there's a good direction where I'm going. I'm going to something good, and now I must make a call. Do I actually get taken to a station and inconvenienced and maybe overnight, or do I pay this guy $1,000? So doing the right thing always. I see people doing wrong things for the bigger picture of the party, or for the bigger picture of my family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It falls into a hierarchy.
I don't ascribe to that because it never lasts. Doing the wrong thing for something bigger or for the team or those kind of things, it always comes out, and it's always negative, and it's always uncontrollable.
Mm.
It's always uncontrollable.
And also very difficult to counter.
Yes.
spot the half lie, what you call a half lie, and then the competent mind, the other side, I think you've learned that in the prosecution world, it's stupid from that point of view, but it's a very good leadership principle.
And perhaps I could give an example. Do you remember, well, I don't want to talk about the facts, but I think it's just an example. In the Pistorius matter, a watch went missing.
Yes, remember.
A watch went missing. And so everybody wanted, you know, can't we just brush it aside or do something? I said, we have to lead evidence. A watch went missing. It must be one of the policemen on the scene that took the watch. And let's carry on. So we did that. And what happened? Everybody accepted that some policeman perhaps took a watch, but it never tainted the prosecution team or the investigating team.
But if you try to avoid it,
exactly. If it comes out and they catch you out in cross-examination, then it doesn't look good. But so, no, there's always short-term benefits in not doing the right thing. And there's short-term horrible things if you do the right thing. But in the long term, doing the right thing will always be the best.
So then the second one, don't expect of people to do what you wouldn't do yourself. Also an interesting one could try and unpack. So sometimes you're a CEO of a business, you got the parallel from in one industry to the next. So, you know, there's a bank teller, you're now the leader of the bank teller ultimately. You know, surely you're not expected to go and do what the bank teller does. But I guess it's an attitude thing. Am I willing to do it? Yeah. Do I see it beneath me? Yeah. Do I see it? Does that make sense?
I agree.
It doesn't always mean you can do what everyone else can do. It means you're willing to if you were able to.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also there's something different to it as well. I think if that's not your attitude, then you want people to do the impossible. Because, and that you can't do. If you ask people to do the impossible, you just break them down and you lose any loyalty that you can ever have with those people. And for me, that is also a big thing, because if you ask people to do the impossible, they look at you and they think, but it's impossible, but you're the boss, you have to go do it. And there's no passion. And you know, I think for myself, if somebody asks you to do impossible things, how do you do it? And what do you do? You can only fail. He sets you up to failure. But it's all that.
But also, Harry, if the person believes it's impossible, but you believe it's possible, then, of course, you'll try and convince him. But that's a different situation.
We jokingly, I would sit there and say, okay, let's go and oppose bail. And the prosecutor would say, but we can't. Okay, don't worry, I'll go do it because I think we can. And then they will go do it. Yeah. I think that's something totally different. But that's just saying it is possible, and if you don't want to do it, I'll do it because I can.
No, that's different.
And then that serves as motivation, because then they go out there and say, well, okay, we'll show you.
Because ultimately a leader takes people to a first or an impossible or something that they initially may have believed was impossible. We're failing as a business. Well, I'm going to show you. We're going to take this business to new heights. It's impossible. We've been trying for the last 3 years, and I know of businesses like that. CLC is a good example. It's always been. But anyway, let me just one step further on the leadership side and then one or two final questions. How do you feel about the current leadership culture in our country? No, before I go there, sorry. Your third point, or maybe it's not a third point, but you raised the fact that, what did you say about no one goes home until
the job is done?
Some leaders take unnecessary pressure, in my view. They're always the last one to leave. Everyone else can leave early and go to their kids and their family and do whatever else, or they take the punishment. They only hand out recognition. I think you must take the pros and the cons as a whole team.
That's what we do. And my teams will tell you that if somebody's got something to do, we're all there and we all help, even if we just stay there. Because, you know, if somebody's got a job to do and he has to sit there at the office till 12 at night and we all go home, I mean, he just gets depressed and you lose the loyalty and you lose the trust. So in all the teams that I've been involved in, that was a principle. We all stay here. We help if we can. Otherwise, we give you coffee and we talk nonsense and things like that. But we're here so that the understanding is, because we're a team and we want to achieve a single goal, we all must work together to achieve that single goal.
Good.
Do you have views on the leadership culture in South Africa? We know 20 years, 25 years ago, everyone was raving, Mandela. I'm not talking now Zuma. I'm not talking politics necessarily. Just the general leadership culture. Do you think it's downward, upward? Any views on it?
It's very difficult to me. I haven't read up on it. But what I can say is that I've worked with national directors of public prosecutions. Mr. Nuko started it. Mr. Bikoli that followed him. Mr. Mshe, Mr. Ngasana. I thought they were brilliant leaders. All different, though. Totally different mm-hmm. leaders at different times, and they all did very well. So I'm not qualified really to venture an opinion on the general leadership qualities.
Mm. So Louis, before I go away from legal and all kinds of things, do you have any comments or questions you want to ask?
We have a kind of a passion to support authentic leadership and oppose toxic behavior as well. Authentic is not perfect leadership. It's sincere and from the heart, without hidden agendas, etc. And I must say that what you come across in spite of your highly disciplined training is being authentic. And I believe this will be part of your new job as well, to bring that across, that you're authentic about the causes you espouse. And it was great sitting down with you, Harry. It really was.
Thank you for the kind words. Thank you very much.
What do you really like behind that media perception of bulldog and pit bull? And what those who really know you intimately, what would they say about you?
They'll say he's a sport nut and a golf nut. I'm really a golf nut. We play golf whenever we can. We're a group of people that have been playing together for lots of years. We go on golf tours. I'm planning one for within the next 2 months, where we go play golf, but it's serious. You know, we're friends, but during the time we get upset because we play for trophies and things like that. So I'm able to relax. And the one thing that I think that saved me and kept me going is I'm able to go home and leave the work at the office and at home, just relax. You know, you can ask my kids, they don't even know what kind of matters I've been involved in, except now Oscar Pistorius, that was big. But for the rest, they didn't know.
Hmm.
We're a family at home. I've got kids that are real good sportsmen, my daughter and son, and I lived into that. I really followed them and supported them and enjoyed every moment with them, went on tours with the South African team with them. And so I was just able to have a family life that never took my work to.
Could you naturally switch off, or is it a discipline you had to acquire over years?
You know, perhaps I don't switch off completely, but I think that people around me would think that you switched off. Because I don't think you can. I think it's very difficult to do. But where I do switch off is, you know, in on the golf course. Because you can't think of the office and play golf against your friends because you'll be bankrupt. So you have to really concentrate. For the 4 or 5 hours I spend on the golf course every weekend, you know, I amaze myself. I drive home and I think, I never thought about anything but golf. And that we're able to do.
What's your handicap?
I'm playing off of 13. I played Wingate Park and... I'm the captain of the handicap league, so we take it seriously.
Just play a nice, good game,
yeah.
Enough to not get super frustrated when you play.
One thing I love sport too, Harry, and played a lot of sport, but I never could quite understand the people who worked for me say that golf was fun.
Yeah. Then they're doing it wrong.
No. No, it is very serious stuff.
All right. I mean, Harry, last comment, and then I end off with, we end off with a... Sibanye executive leadership thought. What's just a leadership thought? And you can give your comment on that too. I think you might be an example of it. Do you know that the worst boss ever is yourself?
Indeed, without a doubt.
Because now you probably felt like you were always your own boss, but you're working inside an institution. Now, I don't know if you really work for AfriForum or what, but you're starting your own unit. Mm. It's going to get maybe tougher than the last few years.
Indeed. I know that, and I know that that I have to think about relaxing. I have to think about this is now enough. We have to go. But I have all those avenues to do, you know, like in golf and family and so on. But you're right. And we've picked it up in the matters. There are two matters that really come to mind, the Celebi matter and the Pistorius matter, where you can really work yourself, you know, into a state. But I hope I've learned lessons there. And I'm getting older, so perhaps that helps.
Helps a bit of wisdom there. Well, we wish you absolutely all the best. Here's the thought I want to end off with, and then maybe Louis can summarize. Enjoy what you do as a leader. Enjoy where you do it. Enjoy who you do it with if you don't make changes. And maybe the last part is not relevant to you in terms of make changes, but you seem to love that, yeah, or try at least.
I cannot be involved in something that I don't feel passionate about and that I enjoy. I have to come to the office, and I must tell you, people ask me that question. I've enjoyed every day in all the matters that I've done, even those days that are you so down that you really think it's the end of the world. But the enjoyment also comes years later, because we're sitting here looking back. All I remember is all the good things. But I enjoyed my work at court, and I certainly will try and enjoy creating this office, and I'm sure I will be able to.
Louis, summarize finally what we take away, thoughts?
So, Gerry, you represent a historic situation in our country because it really represents the spirit of our constitution and our democracy as well. I think the time has come that this new voice arises. It's not new, and yet it is in a very important way. So we encourage very strongly and express appreciation for your courage and your tenacity as well, Gerry.
So Gerry, now thank you for joining us. All the best. And of course, we'll all be watching closely, and hopefully the bite can be a good one, so that you just have to bark ever so quietly afterwards.
From the golf course. Thank you very
much. All the best. Bye-bye. Stay tuned for our Business Masterclass in a moment. And, of course, join us again next week for our Leadership Masterclass on Cliff Central. Cheers, everyone. CliffCentral.com.